There might be some people who are more feeling oriented and some people who are less, but we're all created with the fundamental need and a hardwiring of being feelings people. It's part of our being.
Welcome to the Attached Life Podcast. You're listening to the Stories of Healing series. Each episode will give you a view into what inner healing looks like. Instead of just talking about therapeutic concepts, this series takes you inside the experience. Thank you for listening, and I hope you enjoy.
Welcome to another Stories of Healing episode. This episode is sponsored by my dear friend, Maishi Gottesman, and his family in honor of Maishi's father's yahrzeit, Michal Meir Ben Chaim. This episode, I want to share with you a session that I had with a client, again, a conglomerate of different clients into a fictional, non-fictional character, is a guy named Jonathan. He is in his early 40s, and he came to me primarily because his wife wanted me to see him. She's upset about different things going on in their marriage, and he described to me that their marriage is in a pretty dire situation. They're getting into a lot of fights and having a lot of challenges, not really feeling very connected. They have certain ongoing, almost you could call it chronic arguments. Interestingly, he talks about all of this in a very kind of nonchalant way. It's very okay. He seems very fine with it. He's joking a lot. He is very jovial in a sense, very easygoing about the whole thing. It's not to say that he doesn't care, and it's not to say that it doesn't look like he doesn't care at all, but it's very easygoing in a way that doesn't feel like it's congruent or aligned with what he's talking about on some level. I ask him a little bit about what he's feeling, especially in this session with him, because in this session he came in, I had already met with him a few times, and this session he came in telling me that the marriage is in a worse place than it previously has been. Not necessarily this is the first time it's happened. They've been here before, but right now it's in a worse place than it's been in a while. And so I ask him what he's feeling. And he doesn't really answer my question. He kind of goes into more narrative or more story and starts telling me more about what his wife is doing and what set it off and what the trigger was and how and do I think he's crazy for his perspective of the story and who do I think is right. And he's talking to me about his wife and his wife's perspective and complaining about it and again going on. And so I'm listening and eventually, as there's a pause, I bring him back again to ask, okay, and what are you feeling as you say all this? And again, this kind of goes around in circles a whole bunch of times. So eventually what I decide to do is I take out a feelings wheel, which maybe you've seen before. It's really just a list of feelings, just organized into a wheel of sorts. And I think, okay, maybe this is a way that can kind of pin him down a little bit to have to actually answer my question. And I say, so as you're telling me about this and you're thinking about where things are now in your marriage, if you look at this wheel, which of the feelings here come up for you? Which of these feelings resonate with you? Which of these are you feeling? Do you identify with any of these? And he's looking around and he's asking all sorts of different questions that feel to me like they're kind of fidgeting type questions, procrastinating questions about what the colors on the wheel might mean and how to understand the inner circle of the wheel versus the outer circle of the wheel and are they connected. But eventually he says, I guess, displeased, which is on the wheel, and perplexed, which is on the wheel. And I say, okay. But then he goes right back into his wife's narrative and his narrative about his wife and all the things she's doing. And as he's doing this, I noticed something that really caught my attention as being very interesting. He's talking about her and describing the things she's saying in a way that conveys a sense that he doesn't think she means what she's saying. And so if she's talking about, let's say, not wanting to spend time with him because of something that happened, or she's talking about wanting to move out or consider divorce because of something that happened, or if she's talking about being upset at something he did, he is talking about those things that she's saying with language such as, she always knows how to try and get me. She's using things against me. She always knows how to get what she wants. She can always find a way to get where she's trying, whatever it is that she's trying to get to. And he's talking about these things that she's saying in a way that conveys a sense of he's relating to it as if it's some kind of a game. I think at some point he may have even used that language of a game, that she plays the game very well. And it was interesting because based on what he's describing goes on in the relationship, I imagine that his wife is actually, whether or not she's right or he's wrong or vice versa, regardless of who's right or wrong, I would imagine she's actually very distressed and actually very emotional. But he's talking about it as if these aren't internal experiences. These aren't expressions of an internal experience. So when she talks about not wanting to spend time with him, it's not that she's feeling something and therefore she doesn't want to spend time with him. It's that if she says, I don't want to spend time with you, that's going to then give her leverage on something that now she can benefit from or get her way about. So I noticed that and kind of just make note of it in my mind. But I go back to his feelings and I say, you know, it's kind of interesting to hear you choose the feelings displeased and perplexed. Because, you know, to me, those sound kind of like pretty mild feelings. Pretty pariv. You know, they're not pleasant feelings. They're not, you know, they're not neutral either, but they're kind of just, they are what they are, right? They're just displeased. It's just displeased and that's it. But what you're describing to me feels like a pretty significant situation. So it's interesting that the feelings are so low in their volume or their intensity relative to a higher volume, higher intensity situation. And he doesn't really respond to what I just said. He kind of goes back into the stories and back into the narrative and all of that. And I listen and then I come back to it and say, you know, I hear you, but I'm just still curious. How are you relating to the situation you're in? You know, the feelings you're describing seem pretty minimal relative to the situation you're describing. And he says, yeah, I mean, I'm not a feelings guy. So I said, that's interesting that you think you're not a feelings guy. I think that you closed your feelings a long time ago. Because actually, everyone is a feelings person. There's no such thing as I'm not a feelings guy. Everyone is a feelings guy. There might be some people who are more feeling-oriented and some people who are less feeling-oriented. But we're all created with the fundamental need and a hard wiring of being feelings people. It's part of our being. It's the way we're constructed. There's actually no such thing as not being a feelings guy. That's like, I'm not a breathing guy. Well, everyone is a breathing guy. So he's kind of paused here for a second, finally. And responds eventually by kind of saying, well, I mean, I don't know, I'm just not a feelings guy. And I repeat, well, I think you closed your feelings, closed the door on your feelings a long time ago. They're there. You're just not feeling them. So he says, well, I don't know why that would be. I had a great childhood. I'm not like from one of those homes or situations or never had any trauma. So I don't know why that would be. So I say, okay, well, you know, maybe can you tell me a little bit about your background, about your childhood? I already knew a little bit from when we had just gotten started, but, and he tells me how he had a great childhood, really great life. He was very blessed, very fortunate to be in a very good family, a good home, had everything he needed. Everything seemed great. So I said, that does all sound great. Everything you're describing to me sounds great. Friends and family vacations and good times. That all sounds great. I'm curious, though, if you needed reassurance about something or you were having a hard time with something as a kid or you got hurt, or someone said something to you that didn't feel good, or something happened in a sports game at recess that you didn't feel good about, which of your parents did you go to more for support, for reassurance, for care? Who would you go to first? What was your instinct? And he's kind of thinking and then said, I don't know. I don't think I really did. I mean, both, neither, kind of just didn't really have an answer. Almost as if the territory that the question was pointing towards didn't necessarily exist. And so I asked more about the background and his family, and he ended up describing to me that he came from a relatively financially well-off family. Both parents had kind of high-powered jobs, both did very well, were both very smart, very accomplished people, very heavily involved in community work as well outside their jobs. And it seemed to be, from what we were describing, that these were two very wonderful people, two wonderful parents, who provided everything he needed in his childhood, or almost everything he needed in his childhood. Because what they were lacking was a realization of how busy they were, how much they were outside the home because of work and work events and then community events and community involvement and good things. Thank God, good things they were involved in. But how often they weren't home. And even on vacations, they would be there, but be on a phone or on a laptop. And so much of his childhood ended up being a bonding with his siblings that was centered around having a good time. And all of that was great. And so his memory of it and the way he carries it was, I had a great childhood. And in some ways, in many ways, he did. But what was missing was emotional nourishment. The experience of, I'm feeling something, and that feeling is mirrored back to me by somebody who is present, seeing my feeling, attuning to my feeling, caring about that feeling. And because of that, informing me implicitly that my feelings matter and that my feelings can be addressed and taken care of, not always solved, but that they're real, they're a real thing. And because that didn't exist, when the feelings came up for him, because again, everyone is a feelings person, so the feelings were there. When the feelings were there, they had nowhere to go, and he didn't know what to do with them. And there was no one to run to when he was crying from the scraped knee, or there was no one to turn to talk about feeling left out in the football game, when he didn't get any passes or whatever it may have been. And because there was nothing to do with those feelings, he didn't know what to do with them. And so naturally, he closed them down and shut the door on his own feelings. And we talked about how, in some ways, that was amazing. Because sometimes what happens for people who close the door on their feelings in that way is they excel in other areas. It's like somebody who's blind and develops a much stronger sense of through hearing and smell and touch, or vice versa in some way. And so when an aspect of us is shut down, a different aspect and other aspects overcompensate and fill up the space. So this individual himself became an even higher achieving individual than his parents. Even more business success and even more community involvement. Because there wasn't that place for feelings. And when the feelings were shut down, other aspects of self, action-oriented aspects, overcompensated to fill that space. And he became incredibly successful in those areas. And all of that is great, except that he's missing a fundamental aspect that is needed for a wholesome experience of life success. And because I felt that I had the capacity to say this and it would be okay, it would be well received, just by the nature of who he was. And sometimes, you know, I think sometimes therapists can be a little bit too tactical in their maneuvering around not saying things directly and or saying things but not really saying them. And sometimes it's okay to just say them. And so I said to him, you're really successful in a lot of areas in your life. You're really good at a lot of things. But because you shut the door to your feelings, you really just don't know how to be a husband. You don't know what it means to be a husband. And he's looking at me, kind of just staring at me. And I said, you know, I mean, I don't even mean that with any criticism or judgment. There's a lot of things, for example, that, you know, I don't know how to do at all. I have no training in, I have no experience of, and I have no idea. You know, I was talking to him and he runs a business. I would have no idea how to run your business. Zero. I have no experience, no training, nothing ever cultivated within me that capacity. I could probably learn how to do it, maybe better, maybe worse, but at this moment, I have no capacity. You didn't have the experience, the training, the cultivation of skills of parts of you, of the parts of you that are the things that make up what it means to be a good husband. Parts of being a good husband, like providing, you know how to do, providing financially, that is. But the essence of being a good husband, the essence of being in a relationship, which is to be relational, which involves a very significant amount of emotional presence, emotional attunement to self and other, is simply something that is offline for you. You never had experience with it. It was shut down a very long time ago. And then as we're talking about this, I remember what I had noticed a while back, which was the way he was talking about his wife's actions and expressions, talking about them in a way of as if they're a game, as if they're a maneuver, and not actual experiences or reflections of something that she's feeling on the inside. And I realized, well, that makes so much sense, because anyone who's listened to some of the earlier episodes and stories of healing, I think in particular, David's story was one that we really brought this point out. That there's a principle that I find to be true again and again is that things we're doing to other people are reflections of the things we're doing to ourselves. We understand, interpret, and respond to other people the way that we are actually understanding and responding to ourselves. So Jonathan shut down his experience of emotion in himself, and he doesn't experience himself as having emotions. I'm not a feelings guy, he says. And he genuinely doesn't feel his feelings. And so therefore, everything he's doing is kind of just from the very surface level up. And that's how he relates to himself, which then leads to relating to his wife in very much the same way. When she's expressing things that to most people have a very obvious emotion behind them, she might even be explicitly expressing them as an emotion. I'm feeling isolated. He's told me that she said that. I'm feeling alone. I'm feeling neglected. I'm feeling a lack of trust. These are feelings that she's describing. But he's not hearing them as feelings because feelings are shut down. He's just hearing them from the surface up. He's just hearing them as a way of her trying to position herself for something, to get towards something, to maneuver to some sort of outcome, not that there's actually something genuinely in her that she's feeling. And when you hear Jonathan talk about her like that, in the way that he does, at first glance, it's very off-putting because Jonathan sounds, frankly, just like a jerk in the way he talks about it. But then you realize he is just doing to her what he's doing to himself. He doesn't know any other way. And I try emphasizing this to him again. You're not a bad person. You just don't know how to be a husband because you don't know how to experience feelings. Now, the truth is you actually do know deep down, and it got covered up or it got closed. So then Jonathan asks me, okay, maybe, but why are feelings so important? Why does this matter? Why is this even so relevant? So I respond to this in the classic annoying therapist way by not actually answering his question and instead asking him another question. And I say, well, I'm actually just curious. If we weren't having this session now or whatever, what would normally happen next? Like, what would you do from here? What are you planning on doing? What would you normally do from here? And he says, oh, I mean, I would just, it'll just roll over. This is just kind of how it always goes. She talks about divorce. She gets upset about things. And then it just kind of it'll eventually blow over and things will reset. And so I said, well, actually, I think that is a big part of answering your question as to why emotions are important. Because emotions are messages. We are programmed. It's an amazing thing. We are programmed by God in our design that we have an internal communication system, that our inner eye, if you will, our brain, our perceptive abilities, our inner knowing is constantly assessing things, scanning, seeing, noticing what's going on around us. And it's informing us of its knowledge. That is happening beneath the surface, and it wants our conscious mind to know of certain things. It filters out which things it needs us to know and which things it doesn't need us to know. It's taking in a ton of information at every given moment. Some of the information it's taking in, it's doing something with unconsciously. But then there are things that our inner knowing wants us to consciously become aware of. And so we're programmed that that inner knowing has a method of communication with our conscious mind, meaning our active awareness. And it sends a message. It makes a phone call. It tries to communicate. It comes to the door and knocks on the door of our conscious mind to get our conscious mind's attention, to receive the message of what it wants us to know. And it communicates that, the knock on the door or the vibration of the phone or the ringtone that goes off or the doorbell that goes off. It has a number of different ways of getting our attention. One of them, as we talk about a lot on this podcast, is sensations in the physical body. So if your hand is, God forbid, in a fire, your inner knowing needs you to know consciously that your hand's in a fire, so you pull your hand out of the fire. How does it let you know? How does it knock on the door? By sending you pain. The pain in your finger, in your hand, is actually not the reason to take your hand out of the fire. The reason to take your hand out of the fire is because your hand is burning. The way that your body lets you know that your hand is burning is by sending you pain, which alerts you to pay attention. Another way of communicating is sometimes thoughts. And one of the most important ways that our inner knowing communicates to our conscious mind is through emotions. The emotions are messages, they're information, they're alerts. When we have emotions that feel very pleasant, very positive, very uplifting, those are typically messages that this is something good for us, something good is going on around us, something good is here. We should pay attention to it because it's good. And when we have emotions of distress, those are typically notifications and alerts of our inner knowing trying to tell us something here isn't right. Something needs to be addressed. You need to pay attention to this because something here isn't going right. So if we feel sadness, the sadness is telling us something and we have to figure out what. Maybe it's telling us we need to be more social. Maybe it's telling us we need to find more meaning in our life. And in Jonathan's case, whatever the real feelings that would be coming up would be, those feelings would be telling him that he needs to do something differently in his marriage. But because he has closed down his feelings, he's not getting that message. He silenced the alerts. So there's all sorts of things happening and he's not receiving them. I once heard somebody speak about that one of the most dangerous medical conditions is if a person loses, I think it's the nerve endings, they lose their sense of pain, their pain receptors. And that is actually, we think of pain as a bad thing, but actually it's one of the most dangerous medical situations because that means a person could be standing on something extremely sharp or something very dangerous in some way, something hurtful, and they're not going to feel the pain. So their conscious mind is not going to be alerted to pay attention and do something. Jonathan is not receiving alerts in his life because his emotional communication is shut down. And so that's why when his marriage is in such distress, he talks about it so nonchalantly, and therefore his response to it is nothing, is to just, all right, it's gonna figure itself out. But then he's just going to go right back around into the same cycle again and again and again because he's not receiving the messages. There's also another reason why emotions are so important. I ask him about, I'm curious, you know, what are the good times like in your marriage? Do you ever have, you know, what are the really, really good times? And he starts describing to me some really amazing memories and times. But what I notice is that they're all family-centric, not him and his wife. It's always talking about things with his kids. And it's very fun-oriented. It's very activity-oriented, which is great. Not taking anything away from that. It's beautiful. But he's not describing to me anything that is an experience of connection, of one-to-one connection, an experience of something positively connecting, or the experience of something difficult and distressing that he or she was experiencing, and they were there for each other, they shared with each other, they saw each other, they felt supported by one another, they felt seen by one another, they went through a hard time, and the other one was there for them, and there was something meaningful in that. Or they got lost in a conversation about their thoughts on something, and just took a walk together somewhere. All his descriptions of good times were all more public, more communal, more group-oriented, and more of an activity type of experience. And so what I try to show him is that the other reason that emotions are so important, in addition to being messages, in the messaging sense, emotions are a means to an end. They're a message. But emotions are also an end unto themselves, which is that in the emotional experience, there's a deep experience. It's a deep experience of connection. Then when we share an emotional bond, it's a deeper part of us that is now bonded. And there's something about that that is irreplaceably fulfilling, that is so uniquely meaningful. And sadly, he's missing out on all that. And he's not a jerk. He's just someone whose home environment as a kid was actually very nice, but lacking a really essential and crucial ingredient that then got shut down and overcompensated for by building bigger muscles in other areas that served him very well, but then replicated what was missing and further entrenched how missing it was. And he did this to himself, he does this to himself, and therefore he does it to his wife too. And with explaining all this and discovering and exploring all of this, I was glad that then at the end, he finally turned to me and said, "So how do I start feeling feelings? What do I do?" And I said, "Well, what's the feeling that you just experienced behind asking that question?" And he wasn't sure, but we went back to the feelings wheel. And we explored from there. And that's the work that now Jonathan has to do, is to start trying to allow feelings to be something, to turn back on the messaging system, the alerts, to go into the settings in the app and switch the toggle over so that the messages can come through, and so that the experience of emotional depth that allows for bonding and connection to be reawakened in his life. And how he does that is going to be a process that we'll have to see. Sometimes it's more topical, meaning it's more of a focus on exercises around feeling emotions. And sometimes it requires more of that inner parts, finding the inner child who had to turn the emotions off, finding that inner child and working with him. And so that is yet to be seen. But for all of us, there's no such thing as not being a feelings person. We're all feelings people. We all need our feelings. We need other things too. It's not only feelings. We need all of it. We need the cognitive experience. We need the physical experience. We need the emotional experience. And all of us have the capacity for it, each in our own way. And God willing, when we turn that back on to experience our whole selves, all the parts of ourselves that Hashem created, that God put into us for a reason, it can reawaken and open up experiences that we may have never been able to have before, and bring healing to ourselves, our relationships, our families, our relationship with Hashem, and God willing, one little bit at a time to the whole world.